Cool.
Okay, please welcome Brett.
Okay, this morning we've talked a lot about federation and client-server protocol. This is my answer to that question. Okay, who am I? I'm an independent software contractor. I'm a mercenary. I currently work for financial institutions because they pay good money and pay for my cheese addiction. Yes. I've been programming for over 30 years, but I'm still writing CRUD applications. I think there's something wrong with this picture. The eternal problem I face whenever I walk into a company is a very simple one. The company has a problem. My current instance, I've walked into a company, their claims are currently done physically, i.e. someone drives their truck into a bridge, they print out sheets of paper, stick it in a folder. Does anyone see a problem with this picture? I've been hired, along with a whole bunch of other people, to automate this process. It's a claims automation project. We've been doing these for a few years now. Problem is, the chief technologist in the company has gone, right, what we need is a document management system. No. What you actually need is a way for your claims advisors to talk to each other so that when one picks up the phone, the person who's currently actually working on that claim can talk with the person on the phone and they can both sort out who's doing what and why. That's not what we've done, and it's not what we've done for 30 odd years. We currently, as an industry, write tools to allow people to manage objects as opposed to managing communications. Until we bridge that, we're going to continue making failures. Now, I haven't written up very much the way of OT notes. Following from the questions, I'm getting the distinct feeling here people have got a sort of fuzzy idea of OT. Is this about right? Who's seen the Google I.O. OT talks, which are different to the big demo? So, probably three or four. Okay, at a really simple level, OT is like distributed version control with one major difference. It never fails. You can think of it as sort of a transactional system, but instead of transactions failing, the transactions are actually modified. Thank you, Shane. So you type something in, someone else types something else in somewhere else, and these two edits are actually pushed past each other. They're both transformed so that they can both apply. If this means that you're both deleting the same text, the transformation of the two is fairly obvious. You get the overlapping deletes to make one delete. Same with adding characters, so on and so forth. Okay, here's where I get to show off my code. And there's a lovely race condition somewhere that I've yet to find. So here it is inside Firefox. Here it is inside Safari. Draw lines. And if I go back to Firefox, it should have fallen up. No, it hasn't. I told you, race condition. Do a rectangle. Do a circle. And it hasn't fallen over. There's something wrong here. It's supposed to fall over right here. It's been falling over all morning, and I've got buggy written all through my presentation, and it's not falling over now. The demo gods really like me today. It's okay, I'm presenting from a wave. I can present from Pamela's, even though I can't use a PC to save my life. Yay, it fell over. Yes. Right. Now I can go on with my presentation. Okay, the source code for what you've just seen is all inside Google code.
Specifically, so on and so forth.
The rest of this talk is basically walking through this code base to give you some idea of what I've just shown you. If this is not right, then I can sing and dance if you want. Good change. I don't know how to answer that. Shoot me now. Okay, so what does operational transforms give you, programmers and implementers? It gives you the ability to do a distributed, structured communication. So you can have a document, sort of XML-ish, with a few bit of odds and ends, and you can maintain it across the globe. In fact, you're looking at one here, called Wave. The most important thing here is that you can have multiple people munging the same content, and it will always come to a consistent, converged state, so that everyone's looking at the same thing at the end of the day. So this is getting back to merging, was it booking systems and stuff? It does mean some interesting changes for how you think about how you're writing things, because now instead of, okay, someone's clicked on a button, let's just fire a transaction at the back end, you actually can do it all locally on the client side, and that's what I've done here. What you're actually looking at, the demo is actually a HTML5 canvas with some buttons. That bit there is the communication loop, where it's polling every second for updates, which is where I think my bug is. Okay, now I actually have a look at some code. Here's the part I ripped off from SpeedTracer. Who here has actually seen the SpeedTracer demos? Oh God, guys, please. Go and have a look at them, they are so cool. It's a really neat way of figuring out how you're burning time when you write web applications. Most of the code in this class is straight out of SpeedTracer, a whole shitload of JSNI, and I must say, writing JSNI stands for JavaScript Native Interface. It's a way of bridging Java and JavaScript inside of GWT. The JSNI editor inside of Eclipse 3.5 for GWT2 is so much better than it used to be. It's almost usable. The major thing I've added to this class, apart from having to move it because of the App Engine plugin into my own really cool thing to figure out 2 hours before a presentation, trying to publish to App Engine requires your code to only have one GWT package, otherwise it spits the dummy. So I've actually had to reparent everything. The major thing about it here to the canvas is the ability to handle clicks, which is kind of important when you're trying to do an editor using Canvas. Okay. And of course, I've pulled the GWT component of the Fed1 codebase, which you really should actually dig through if you feel like hurting your head. There's some really nice code in here. Google engineers love patterns, which I'll get to in a second. They've got a really, it's stretched my brain. Being a Java programmer in industry, you get to a certain level of programming. Then you go and read the Google code and you go, oh shit, I need to remember what patterns are again. Okay, when you're writing OT code, here's the classes from Google's codebase that you really need to get a feel for really quickly because they're all over the place. Doc initialization. This is effectively your document. This is what you store at the end of the day. what it basically says is, here's a range of characters, here's an element, here's the close element, and here's annotations, even though I haven't touched annotations myself. It's defined in terms of a visitor, doc initialization cursor. DocOp itself is that concept taken further, so not now you not only have character ranges, elements and annotations, but you have retains, you have deletes. What this means is that while doc initialization is basically a standalone document, a DocOp is actually an edit. So this is where you get your version control sort of analogy coming through. Whenever you want to turn around and make a change to a document, you make a DocOp. Or in fact, you actually use a buffered DocOp, because that's much easier than implementing it yourself. And the way you build DocOps is using a DocOp builder, which is a nice little builder implementation. So you sit there and go, I'll have a retain of so many characters, a start element, an end element. That becomes an operation, which I can then commit to a document using Composer and Transformer, but we'll get to that in a second. Now, as has already been mentioned, the communication strategy between Google's Wave GUID shell, which is what you're looking at here, and the backend server is using JSON protobufs. I decided not to hurt my head by trying to re-implement that. I just went ahead and used GUID RPC. Now, the problem with using GUID RPC is that all your communications have to be serializable. Unfortunately, DocOps aren't. So I went and re-implemented a whole bunch of classes just so that I could shuffle buffer DocOps across the wire and back again. Things you do at 4 a.m. because you're bored. So the backend services that we're actually I'm calling, so it was going to be an app engine. I didn't quite make it that far. As you see, I've still got bugs, so I didn't actually finish it. The implementation for these, that would be the interface. Not very interesting. Oh yeah, let's talk about the data model. What you're actually seeing when you look at my little standalone client here is not your standard what you think of when you think of Wave as in this big text document. This is actually a display list coming from the graphics world. So what it consists of is a list of XML-ish entities that consist of a line element, a circle element, and a rectangle element, each of which has attributes saying like where the center is and what the radius is. They should actually say color, but I didn't get that far. There's a slot in my HTML right after that clear button for putting a drop down to nominate the color. An exercise for the interested reader. So when talking about DocOps, here's what it actually looks like to use a DocOp backend. So what I do to render what you're seeing in the canvas is I take the document, the doc initialization, which I have stored in the GUID client, and every time I re-render that screen or re-render that canvas, I walk through the document looking for the start of the elements I mentioned before, the circle, the rectangle, the square. So effectively, element start is the only part of the doc initialization cursor which is interesting. And if it's a circle, this is actually just a string. Oops, don't do that. This says basically circle as a string. And if it contains a center, an X, a Y, and a radius, spit it onto the screen using Canvas. And that was the code I showed you before, which is a very thin wrapper around the HTML5 canvas. Same again, the line, the rectangle. this wave reposition where I am every time I flip screens? Juju. Okay. How do you actually construct a dock operation? Magic? Yeah. So what I'm doing to create, to basically go, someone's clicked on the rectangle, figured out where the start and end of it is. Now I need to insert into that document, hey, I've got a new rectangle element. How do I do that? I go and get my good old friendly Doc Op Builder. First thing I do is I go, how long is my document in memory? How many elements do I have? And because I'm just using elements, it's 2 times the number of elements I have, because I have an element start, element end, element start, element end for each one. Kind of based on the XML model, though honestly it's more the Lisp model, but anyway. So I check how long my document is, do retain that many elements, and then insert an element at the end. How that rolls out is an element start, say what it is, rectangle in this case, with a set of attributes. There's your XML thing where it's basically, I say rectangle X, here, rectangle Y, so on and so forth. And I've got height and width. Then I fire that edit into my back-end communication strategy and basically go, Mr. Server, please accept the fact that I now have a new rectangle. And then I fire off and go, Canvas, repaint. Now the interesting thing here is I'm not waiting for the server to tell me that it's accepted that I have a rectangle before repainting. I'm actually repainting off my client-side document. And when the server gets around to accepting the fact that I've added a rectangle, it will come back to me later on and go, yeah, okay, that's cool. Or more likely, here's some content that someone else has added. You might want to render this as well. But I'll get to that in a sec. Probably the most boring class in my project, because it's a whole lot of plumbing, is this. It's GWT's version of a main. It's basically reach into the document and go, I need this element, I need this element, I need this element. It's basically grabbing the elements for all the buttons, the canvas, and the two informational areas. I should actually be using something like UI Binder and GWT Goose. Is that how you say it? Goose? Use juice gin for doing this, but I haven't because I ran out of time. So I'm doing it all by hand. Sorry, it's boring, but yeah. Let me fill some of this. On the server side, what's my server side representation? I don't actually have a dock initialization on the server. What I'm storing on the server, strange enough, is just a linear list of edits. I do make sure, however, when I accept an edit, that what I finally wind up with is a document. But because as every client comes in at a different point in that history and wants to know what comes after that point, it doesn't make much sense in this model to store a solid thing. I need to store it broken out so that I can give the appropriate window to whether I'm doing an update or whether I'm doing a poll. So there's the list of buffered doc ops that consist of my document history. I've actually implemented this as a singleton, which is why I can't really deploy this to App Engine, because if I wind up with more than one server, I actually wind up with multiple histories and it all goes terribly wrong. The intention here was to actually rip this out and replace it using Memcache. So I actually use Memcache to do a transactional backend for this across App Engine, because I figured out how to do that after being hinted that it is actually possible. But again, yet another thing in this code base that remains undone. There's so many to-dos in this code base, it kind of scares me. But that's okay. I figured out now that I've got this far, I need to rip it down and start again. I've learned so much, it's all wrong, but it's a good place to start. Here we go. The Gwt RPC basically works by having servlets that get fed the Gwt RPC serialized format, but each of them is just a really thin wrapper around the document I just showed you. Basically ask the document, please run an update or please run a poll. I suspect poll is where my bug is that we were seeing before. So here's document. One thing I did notice the other night, I really broke my concurrency. That should be synchronized and it doesn't make sense anyway. Oops. So the actual core of everything that you're seeing in a Wave server or in a distributed concurrent setup is actually in this method. Because effectively what we're saying here is if the client is requesting a version that's later than I know about, they're insane, tell them to go away. If they're equal to, if they're effectively asking for an edit update at head, then what I'm doing is compose the edit they've asked. Sorry. Let's walk through this. So this bit here is where we start. We take the edit history, which is that list of doc ops, turn that into a single document. So I basically smush them together. Add on the edit the client has given me, which is like usually add a rectangle at this point of this width and this height. So, oops, I'm doing lift style head highlighting. So that's coming together with one doc op. The next thing I do is that I confirm that what the client has actually asked me to do results in a valid document. It's not a good idea to wind up storing in the server a document history that winds up with a document that still has deletes or retains in it. The Wave server currently has this problem. And then finally, I've got a little method in here which basically walks the resulting doc initialization going, okay, how many characters do I have? How long is it? I need to figure this out because what I figured out after breaking a lot of times, instead of just sending back a null, I need to actually send back to the client when they've committed a head, here's a retain for the amount of elements in your document. But you don't want to send back a retain of zero because Buffer Doc Op Builder gets really cranky if you tell it to build a retain of zero. Giddy thing. And if they're not at head, if they're committing somewhere in the past, oh no, sorry, I just walked you through get edits from version. That's my poll. Sorry. No wonder it was a little bit too easy. There was no transforms. Okay, let's do that again. There's a version of adding an edit at head. This is adding an edit sometime in the past. So effectively what you've got is this history, bunch of edits. Someone comes in here and says, I want to add an edit halfway in your past. We've now got two alternate history lines. We need to take these two lines, bring them together. The magic that does this is this line here. So effectively what I'm... Have I got that in the right order? I'll look at it later. Transformer does slightly different things depending on the client side and the server side, so that basically the client and the server will wind up in the same space and time. So what I do is I take the relevant history, i.e. from the edit forward, compose that into one edit, take the client edit, transform them past each other. Here's the magic of OT, the transform function. So it turns around and goes, you're adding
a rectangle at the end, and someone else has added a bunch of other stuff also at the end, will wind up and stick you in the middle of the document, and gee whiz, magically, we all wind up in the same place. And this is how Wave gives you the ability to do distributed communications, that one line. Actually, before I go on to Google's love of patterns, the reason my head breaks whenever anybody talks about we must come up with a client protocol is, as far as I can tell, most people talking about a client protocol think the client is simpler than the server. I hate to break it to you, but because of the fact that OT is basically symmetric, implementing a server is actually easier than implementing a client from certain perspectives. All you need to worry about on the server is making sure you write to the disk at the right time, i.e. not too often, or your disks will melt. And the fact that you've got a bunch of different clients talking to you, that's all you have to worry about on the server. It's actually really simple. That's why my yes, as pointed out by the gentleman in the front row, use Memcache or an equivalent style technology to make sure your disks don't melt. He'll be doing a talk on Memcache tomorrow. I will hopefully be there. So that's all you need to worry about on the server side. You need the ability to make sure your disks don't melt, and the fact that you keep talking to all your clients, probably with something like, I don't know, WebSocket. On the client side, you've got a much harder problem in that you've got edits coming in at random points in your document, and you need to show these to the user. Oh, and you also need to make sure you're doing OT in the client that matches OT in the server. So all the claims about we need a client-server protocol, if anyone's watched the mailing list, I tend to jump up and down on and go, dude, implement the server, it's easier. And as a result, you'll even understand what you're doing, which will make writing the client easier. Sorry, James, had to disagree with you. No, don't worry about it. I'll tell you after this. Yeah, it's necessary, but yeah. What, us, bitch? Like, on stage? Surely not. Okay. The one pattern that jumps out at you if you read the OT codebase is a strategy pattern, because Transformer and I think Composer also are implemented in terms of strategy. And it's also important for understanding my codebase because I've got two of them. I've got a strategy for interacting with the user and a strategy for interacting with the server. Oh, and these two strategies have to interoperate, which is where I think I'm breaking. Or actually, no, I think I'm breaking on my client-server strategy in two different clients. I'll figure it out later when I've got some brain space. What is the strategy? Okay, in object orientation land, the traditional way of thinking about an object is, here we have an object that has some state and has some methods. All good and well. So your methods depend on the state. That makes sense. It turns out to lead to a horrible mess of spaghetti code if you do it that way. What's easier is to take all your state and turn it into an inner class that implements an interface and then delegate to it. That's a really short explanation. The longer explanation is on that wiki page. I suggest if you don't understand strategies, you go and read it. Come and hassle me at the bar afterwards. I'll sit there and draw diagrams for you. It's really a really good pattern for doing pretty much everything inside object orientation. So, the two strategies in my code base. First one, handling the user interface. Don't know if you noticed it, but if you start here, there's no tool selected. You click on rectangle, the hint changes. This is a different state. Click there, you've progressed to another state. You click again, there's your third state. Each one of those is a different strategy, because each of those strategies is responsible for updating the screen, i.e. when I render my canvas, which I do fairly frequently, after I've walked the list of the internal document, which puts all the squares on the page, I then ask the canvas handling strategy, would you please update yourself? And what it's doing frequently is drawing that little red square, telling the user what to do next. Yes. Every second I'm asking a server, give me any updates. Okay. Do you do much web development? Okay. Okay, you've just walked into the middle of a war that's been running in the web community for a long time. Okay, just a minor digression because it amuses the crap out of me. Every time I get someone who's done traditional server development, you know, written, say, a mail server or a new server, they look at a web client and go, oh, couldn't you just have the server tell the client when shit changes? If only it were that easy. Sort of, in a really bad, hacky way we have, we're actually getting to the, okay. One of the great founding ideals of the web was... Tell you what, how about you buy me beer afterwards and I'll draw on a big piece of paper and show you, because... Okay, the question is, do you need two servers? Short answer is, if you're using a good programming language, no. But if you want to scale, because remember, chips are not getting any bigger or any faster, we're just getting more cores on chip. The reality is you need to scale sideways, at which point, yes, you do actually need more than one server. You need one server that's actually a cluster which was responsible for pushing out updates, another server cluster that's responsible for handling incoming. At which point your brain tends to explode because you need to have communication between these server clusters and your disks melt and all sorts of unfun things happen. As the learned gentleman in the front row keeps pointing out memcache, but I believe there's a track on this tomorrow. it's the world in which we all live. Fill over again. Actually, no, it's server. Yeah. This has actually got to the other state, which I didn't mention. It fell over. Actually, no, I haven't talked about server sync yet. So if I refresh that, it comes back with a state. To finish off that digression, can't you just have the server tell a client? It's called WebSocket. Where there is WebSocket. Initial WebSocket support in Chrome Developer, I believe. Jetty has it, so on and so forth. So the short answer is yes, but it just takes more code. And you really want to get to the point where you're using threads in the client, at which point you need to do some magic with GWT. That's the reason I haven't done it here. I just talked you through those bits. It would be nice. Currently, there is no ability to select the items on the canvas. It would be nice to have the no tool selected actually select, figure out what you're pointing at when you click on the, and allow you to edit it. Yet more strategies, or yet more implementations of a canvas handler strategy. Strategy the second, handling the server. Currently, I have four states in this one. What this is responsible for is taking edits from the canvas, from taking callbacks from the server, i.e. poll responses, update responses, exceptions in those responses, and having its own idler loop, which we just had that digression about. So I've got four states, idling, which actually loops back to itself, because at the start, it fires off a request to the server to get a poll update, have an edit in flight, which basically at the start fires an edit at the server, waits for that edit to come back, If the client then, if the user then adds another edit, I select another tool and plugs in while this edit is in flight, we go to another stage where we're holding back, and when that edit in flight finishes, we then fire the new one. And if it all goes horribly wrong, we get the final state, which is sync lost, aka everything goes shiny. And there's my thoughts so far on the bug. I've got some ways of trying to track it down, but I need to not be panicking about presenting for presenting to you guys before I can actually attack this one. Okay, that's my talk so far. It will probably get better in the coming weeks and months. My question to you is, what questions do you have for me? I think I killed them all. Yep.
No one wants to ask about push versus pull? Or? All right, please join me in thanking Brett.